Good morning and welcome to Words Out Loud, a fortnightly program designed for readers and writers who live in the northern areas. There will be local news, writers' tips, and a chance for you to be involved as well with our five-word challenge. I'm Joanne Baker. Let me introduce today's panel. We have regular panellist and host of Easy Does It, Marilyn Simpson.
Hello, everyone.
Spoken word and performance poet, member of many writers' groups, Gordon McPherson.
Hello, everybody.
And here today to promote her upcoming book, Aunt Enid, full-time writer and owner of Kraken Publishing, we have Karen Carlisle.
Good day.
Welcome, Karen.
Hello.
First up, let's hear what's been happening in the writer's world in the last fortnight.
Well, it was really rocking out at Gawler on the weekend. Amelia Walker came up and she gave a seminar, or workshop probably is a better word, and the idea was that they were going to write a book in 90 minutes. That's how it was advertised. But when they got there, it was actually, she had heaps of I wasn't there, but this is what I've been told, heaps of magazines and newspapers and stuff, and people had to write, cut out words and bits and put them together to make a sort of a story. And there were a couple of older people there who didn't have a clue what they were doing, and they were very much out of their comfort zone. I really wondered what they'd struck, and they'd never heard of Dada or know anything about it, but they do now, so they've been educated. And they actually did a very, very good job. And Amelia went around and photographed everybody's efforts. People were doing as many as they could of these little, know what you would call them, snippets, for want of a better word. And that was what was happening at Gawler last week.
That sounds really interesting.
I'm a bit disappointed I couldn't make it, yeah.
It's quite a long distance to travel for a lot of people, but it sounded fascinating. After the break, we'll have the writer's tip of the day with Connie Berg.
If you're an adult who has difficulties with reading, writing or spelling, the Reading Writing Hotline has some very good news. It can actually be easier to take the plunge and improve your reading and writing skills than to keep putting it off. Phone the Reading Writing Hotline and find out how. Their number is 1300 655506. That's the Reading Writing Hotline, and they're there to help. 1300 655506. Go on, take the plunge.
Welcome to Words Out Loud. This is Connie Berg. Today we're going to talk about adjectives. An adjective is a describing word. They modify nouns and pronouns. They tell us what things are like, what they look like, how big they are, and how many of them there are. For example, an ugly bug. The bug is ugly. Ugly is the adjective. A ghastly girl. A blue moon. 30 people. That's how many people there are. 30 is the adjective. They can be derived from proper nouns to describe things like historical periods, like Elizabethan or Shakespearean. They can be about nationalities. You can be Parisian. You can be Australian. You can be associated with a person, like you can do a Freudian slip. When you have the suffix ian or ean, it means of, pertaining to this person or place. And esque means in the style of. So a novel that is Dante-esque is in a style of Dante's writing. Most of these adjectives that are derived from proper, from people and places, are capitalized because then they are a proper noun. So Dante-esque would be with a capital D. Sometimes they can become so common that they no longer use the capital. Foodstuffs named after their place of origin, like champagne, can either be capitalized or not. It's proper to do it either way. A group of words can also act as an adjective, either an adjectival clause or an adjectival phrase. So my colleagues, who all earn more than I do, never work overtime. So the phrase, or the clause, who all earn more than I do, is the acting as the adjective. In the sentence, he is the one person in the department earning less than I do. The phrase, earning less than I do, is the adjective. So the difference is the clause has a verb and a noun, and the phrase does not. It's easy to go overboard with your adjectives, and sometimes they are used so often that they become kind of permanently stuck together, and it's at that point when they become cliches. A safe haven. What type of haven is it? It's a safe one. Tuna fish. What type of fish is it? It's tuna. And an unexpected surprise. Well, that's pretty much redundant, isn't it? A surprise is a surprise. It's not always unexpected. And so these become kind of under the category of cliché. So if it adds something, use the adjective. And if it doesn't, leave it out. For Words Out Loud, this is Connie Berg.
Well, that kind of hurt my brain.
Back in school with your grammar.
Oh, well, I know how a sentence works. If it comes out right, I know.
Yes.
I know if it works. I just haven't thought of the...
Yeah, I write by feel.
Yeah, it's more about feel for me.
You can overdo the adjectives.
Oh, yes. A dark and stormy night can get a bit tired.
Dark and stormy.
Quote of the day, Joanne, shall we...
Absolutely.
Move on to that. All right, the quote of the day today comes from C.S. Lewis, and he said, "Literature adds to reality. It does not simply describe it. It enriches the necessary competencies that daily life requires and provides. And in this respect, it irrigates the deserts that our lives have already become."
Beautiful quote.
Very deep.
Excellent quote.
Does he mean reading literature or writing literature?
Yes.
Yes.
Good
yes,
question.
I agree. No, it's both.
Let me throw in an adjective here. I'm confused.
It's both. Writing, you lose yourself in writing a story, but if it's a good story, you lose yourself in reading it too.
Sometimes when I'm writing, I'll find I've been gritting my teeth because I've been like... on the edge of my seat while I've been writing something.
It's a wonderful thing.
PBOFM 89.7, a proud contributor to community radio.
Karen Carlisle is an imaginer and writer of speculative fiction, steampunk, Victorian mystery and fantasy. She graduated in 1986 from the Queensland Institute of Technology with a Bachelor of Applied Science in optometry, and lives in Adelaide with her family and the ghost of her ancient Devon Rex cat. So how did you get into writing steampunk?
Steampunk? Well, I've always liked science and art. When I was at school, I did a lot of art and they weren't allowed to put art and science together. So I graduated through science fiction, Doctor Who, Star Wars, Star Trek, all that sort of stuff, and... recently, just started writing. I was actually going to write a fantasy book, and it ended up being steampunk. So steampunk is, you've got your alternate history. So I've always been a bit of a history buff. So I did. I was a member of the Society of Creative Anachronism. They do medieval stuff, and I do Victorian costuming and stuff like that. And I love research. I love doing research. That's my big procrastination thing is research, and I can actually change history. And I can add in fun little whimsical arty bits. So it's sort of art and science mixed together. It's real fun.
So do you completely change history or do you keep pivotal points as...
It depends. Like in my first book, Dr. Jack, it was about Jack the Ripper because, you know, a lot of people know Jack the Ripper. So a friend of mine was a ripperologist, so I ran a few things past her. And I just changed a few things. So if you know Jack the Ripper, in there you'll find all these different facts. They're actually facts of the legend and story, but I've said, okay, well, in my case, Jack the Ripper was this particular person, which I won't tell you because that's a spoiler, but he was actually being organised by the secret society in their plots to take over the empire, and he was actually doing the killings for them for a particular reason, and I have little different facts. So I actually tell you, if you know your Jack the Ripper, in the final murder that they know he did, well, they assume he did, I tell you why there's a pot and then there's the clothing and then there's a hat on top of it in the fireplace, which they never could work out. So I actually tell you why that happens.
I watched a movie called Wild Wild West.
Oh, yes.
Now, is that steampunk?
That's steampunk, yes. Well, Wild Wild West is one of those things where people go, you go, well, I go, what's steampunk? And you go, okay, it's a reimagination of an alternate history as if you'd never had electronic stuff and you steam technology, and they look at you blankly and you go, did you ever see Wild Wild West? And they go, oh, yes! And you go, that's steampunk. So we sort of like it and don't like it, but I think it was fun, actually. So
I enjoyed that. It was very funny.
But some people, yeah.
It's the commercial version of steampunk, and people like to be a bit snobby about it.
Yeah, about that time, Hollywood decided they would make a bit of money out of steampunk, and then they worked out that they couldn't really make money as steampunk.
It's quite expensive to run.
No, because steampunk is very much into being an individual and your own creation and into expressing stuff. So it's very sort of touchy-feely. It's hard. You can't just, as a song says, you can't just stick a hog on it and call it steampunk.
It's not just an alternative history, is it? It's
no.
It's a different basis to the technology.
Yes, so you're using steam and cogs. The Babbage machine, which was one of the first computers, which actually was all run by steam and cogs and clockwork type stuff rather than electronic and on-off things.
So could you get to, say, a steam-powered TV, or would that be a bit beyond?
I think people have written about that, yes. In Wild Wild West, they had a thing where you could see the back of his in his head and film it. So.
Oh, right. Yes, I remember that.
Mm.
Quite eerie.
It's called an octogram. They actually used an octogram. Yes, they did, in my book anyway. But they actually did start looking at them to try to catch murderers in the 19th century. They actually did think it was an actual thing. But
Just another con?
There's a big debate. you can't really see what the person saw when they died.
So what is the technological basis in your novel? What's the different one, the steam-powered one?
Lots of things. They have mechanical limbs. I have, in the last one, the Illusioneer, I actually have three different stories, and one of them, from the depths, there's a beast, but is it a beast? You know, I do a lot of is it or isn't it type things. So you have dirigibles. Dirigibles are good. Dirigibles
are cool. Great name as well, dirigible, yes.
So, yeah. Yeah, it's just, yeah, you come up with something like you'll have, I can't think of anything right now, isn't that terrible? You might say, okay, well, how can I create, you could create a steampunk, steam-driven mechanical bread slicer, for example. You just do whatever you've got now. People who write it can come up with an idea and they go, oh, I want to do this, and then they work out how can they do it without electronics.
We were discussing earlier about the science-art so-called division.
Yes.
And I'd like to sort of throw this open to the panel.
Mm-hmm.
What do you feel about that? Because my feelings about it is that basically there's no division.
I feel that they're tied together. There's so many, particularly in music, you've got Brian Cox, who is a very well-known physicist who was in a band. Stephen May. Brian May. Oh, I'm terrible with names. He was the guitarist in Freddie Mercury's band.
Oh, the Queen. Queen,
yep.
Yeah.
And he actually did a new way of seeing 3D when they went to which planet was it? Saturn, I think.
Mm.
One of the recent patterns in the moon. He actually has created a way that they filmed it so they can actually do 3D and get more information. There's a lot of actors who are scientists as well. I wanted to do, in high school, I wanted to do science. Because my maths is terrible. So my favourite subjects were actually art, physics and English. I did very well in those without even trying. And I wanted to do art instead of the second maths, and I was not allowed to. It was forbidden. The teacher, the principal said it was not allowed.
But with the whole course structure back then, I think even now, is still divisive.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. The two work together. Mm. Einstein even said you need imagination. You can't think up ideas without it, no.
And it doesn't come from a bottle of wine either. It comes from imagination.
No.
Some mental capacity that you've got.
You've got to be able to do the what if. Hmm. And especially back in the 80s, they were training scientists, at high school anyway, they wouldn't let you do the what if. It was, this is the, yeah. Hmm. It's a bugbear of mine, that one.
Yeah. Well, I know it's Einstein who said, if you want your child to be smart, read them stories. If you want them to be a genius, read them more stories.
Yes, exactly. They've done so many studies on reading kids' stories and music, increasing IQ and helping with maths. They've done so much stuff with the two together. It's two halves of brains working together.
Absolutely. Music, well, it's one of those things that it activates different parts of your brain.
That's right.
That's why a lot of people like to listen to music while they're studying.
Mm-hmm. I listen to music while I'm writing or studying. Yes, I would always do that. Help me remember.
That's funny. I don't. I find it a distraction.
I've
got to have complete silence. I'm just one of those people. I'm sorry.
I understand. I think it's because I listen for I listen for the lyrics and we hear the story.
That's what puts me off. And if I'm dreaming up
get
my own words
by it,
and I hear the lyrics, like, go away, stop it, be quiet.
Absolutely. I need silence when I'm writing.
I write by feel. I've got to have this. Sometimes I actually put on a TV show or something that is ish for what I'm writing to get in the mood as well. And then I go, oh, that's a good idea. And I just go off with the pixies.
Fairies.
Yes.
What distraction do you use when you write?
What distraction?
Yes. Or do you need complete silence, or do you use the same?
How do you go about your writing
process? Usually do it in complete silence, but an instrumental would be okay.
Mm.
It's the words of a song that would distract me.
Yes. I get distracted by lyrics. Just because if I like a song and I want to know the lyrics.
Yeah.
I think it's just in my head anyway, so I just automatically sing it and don't even know what I'm singing half the time. I got on autopilot.
So you're here to promote your book launch. We better get on to that.
Yes.
Tell us about what's happening.
Okay. Well, I was hoping to have Aunt Enid, it's hard to say, Aunt Enid Protector Extraordinaire. Try to say that very quickly. So I'm writing a totally different genre this time, and I was hoping to have it coming out next week, but I've been, as you can tell probably from when I'm coughing, hang on. I went to Melbourne and almost got asthma. Didn't get bronchitis, yay. So I've been pushed back about a month, so I'm hoping by the end of the month to have it out. And it's a very different genre. It's one of my friends said it is a cozy paranormal mystery. So it's totally different to what I've ever written before, and I'm having a ball writing it, actually. There's just so many things from my childhood bubbling up. So basically, Aunt Enid, well, actually it's Great Aunt Enid. She's about 70-something, and she's the only person protecting the world from the demons and the masties coming from other worlds.
So, that's what Aunt Enids have done from time immemorial.
Yes. I'm having a lot of fun. So, but there's just so many things bubbling up from my childhood. I actually did have a great Aunt Enid, and she was pretty cool.
You have some upcoming events happening. Tell us about those.
Okay, so what day are we now? Okay, so 12th of May next weekend, there's PopCon 2.0, which is like a mini pop culture event, and that's at the Theberton Community Centre. And this is their second year, and they've got an artist alley and costume competitions and everything. They've ramped it up a bit. And I've got a table in the artist alley, and I'm also on a steampunk panel with James Murray, who's a fellow costumer, and Jess Kate and Yana Hoffman, who are comic book creators. They've created the steampunk comic book Heart of Malaria. So they're going to be on the panel. Well, that's at 4:30.
See, because you're not just a writer of books.
No.
You do your own artwork.
Yep.
You are a costumer as well.
Yep.
You do steampunk costumes.
Yep, for about a decade now. So.
Mugs?
Yes, I've got mugs, T-shirts.
T-shirts.
So I'm wearing my T-shirt today. It says, "You and Whose Army?" That's actually a line from the book. Okay. Oh, spoiler. Okay. So I do that. I also do the book trailers and videos. So I often say, and it's one of those things. I actually said this when I left school. They go, "What do you want to be?" And I said, "Well, I want to be a cinematographer, a photographer, an astronaut. I wanted to write, and I wanted to be Doctor Who's next companion." So all those things all together. So instead, I chose a very safe job. And
now you're doing the Doctor
Now I'm doing
Who's
all the
companion.
Things I wanted to do. Now I'm doing all the things I wanted to do. So I'm doing video and I'm doing photography. I did the covers of the books. I do the artwork, everything. Yeah, because just, you know.
Now you're just waiting on Doctor Who.
Oh, hell yeah. That was so cool. One of my things I would love is one day to write for Doctor Who. One of my friends has actually written a book for the 50th anniversary. I was so jealous. So yeah, that would be one of my things is if they said, "Ooh, you want to write
put her in a novel and make her a villain."
No, she's nice. She's too nice. So yeah.
Well, how do people get hold of you or get hold of your works?
Okay, well, I've actually got a website. It is www.karenjcarlisle.com. Ha! Huh, how easy is that? And I've got stuff on there. And about my books, and I've got what I'm writing at the moment, and I've got stuff about steampunk, and I've got events on there as well. I'm also on Facebook and Twitter, and yeah.
You name it, you can find it.
Not quite everything, but yeah. So, but yeah, and of course, we've got September's the big steampunk festival. So it's bigger and better this year, too. So it's really cool. And I'll be launching my fifth book there.
What's the name of the fifth book?
The Department of Curiosities. It's a steampunk adventure.
More steampunk?
Yeah, more steampunk. I like steampunk.
Well, that's
it's
fun.
It's fun!
New characters, Karen? Or?
Yeah, new characters, yes. So the main character is Tilly Merriweather, and she has a bit of a past, and she comes across this person who is a bit of a very mysterious person. I actually, it's the same world as my first steampunk series, but it's a bit more lighthearted. And you actually do come across, in the third book, The Illusioneer, you do actually come across members of the Department of Curiosities in there. There's a particular character in there from there. He's not in the next series, but you actually, it's all intertwined.
They're all intertwined.
They're all intertwined.
Going to go for a big movie deal, are you?
Yeah, but, you know, most even well-known authors who get movie deals, nothing ever happens of it anyway, so...
Yeah, but they get paid.
Yeah, that would be nice. That's nice. Pay would be nice.
That's always nice.
Yes, I don't get much of that these days.
You're listening to Words Out Loud on PBAFM 89.7. Don't forget to follow us on Facebook. After this short break, we'll play our latest radio drama by a local author. And following that, we'll have your chance to be involved with the five-word challenge. So get your pencil and paper ready.
If there's something happening in your local community, you'll hear about it on Community Radio. Community Radio promotes active volunteer participation in media production rather than passive consumption. Volunteers are the backbone of community broadcasting. Community Radio offers people from all walks of life the skills, resources, and opportunities to understand media by actively participating in its creation.
Support media accessibility by supporting your local community broadcaster.
This is a PBAFM radio drama. Gladys. By F.J. Willett.
Beryl! Beryl, come here! You know, Beryl, I've never been one to gossip. No, never. On my mother's grave, Beryl, I swear. I abhor gossips, Beryl, I do. I really abhor 'em. But I've got to tell you this, Beryl. You'll be shocked, I mean it. It's shocking. It really is. Just plain shocking. You know young Charlize up on the fourth floor? Now, you know, I'd never say a bad word about anyone, but Beryl, does she drink like a fish? I've never seen anyone stack it away like... No, not the Charlize who got herself preggers. That was Charlize in marketing. Personally, I always suspected Danny in accounting there. You know Danny in accounting? Always getting driving ticket speeds like you wouldn't believe. It's a wonder he didn't kill young Julia in that accident. Julia, dear, the secretary to Mr. Johnson on the third floor, purchasing? That's right, terrible womanizer, always in the stockroom. Well, young Julia was in the car with Danny from accounting when he hit that tree. Yes. Now, I won't say what she was doing when the car crashed, but what I hear, on good authority, is that she had her hands full at the time. And her mouth. Say no more. I was shocked to hear it. Shocked! Now, I'm not one to gossip. I abhor gossips. I do. But I've heard worse. Yes, I have. I heard Ruby's hubby. Yeah, Mr. Braithwaite. Now, ill for years. Ruby looked after him staunchly, heroically. You can't deny it. But then, all of a sudden... Ruby's hubby turns up his toes, just like that. No apparent reason. One day here, the next, gone. And they say Ruby has suddenly come into quite a bit of money. Now, I'm not one to gossip. I abhor gossips. But there's no denying something happened to Ruby's hubby. Who's to say it wasn't foul play? And now Ruby's been seen walking out with a younger man. Yes, Beryl. Your son. I couldn't believe it. Your son. Could he possibly have helped her to do it? Helped her to dispose of Mr. Braithwaite? Beryl! What do you mean? Me? A gossip? Never I bore gossips. I do. Beryl, I'd never. No! Beryl! Beryl! Come back! Beryl!
That was Gladys by F.J. Willett. The part of Gladys was played by Annette Hurd. This was a PBA FM radio drama.
It's five-word challenge time. This is when we give you five words from an author's work. You give yourself 10 minutes. You write a poem or a short piece of prose. Don't take any longer than 10 minutes because we haven't got time to read anything that
it's takes epic.
Longer than 10 minutes to write. So last time, the words from the challenge were taken from We Live, We Die, a poetry anthology by Annette Hurd. The words were possible, shield, silence, deserve, and a Kubra. I have one here from Pam Dennis. Who would think it was possible? No shield to protect an innocent one, suffering in silence. Unknown, the happy teen, covering up the bullying one didn't deserve. The young face of the iconic Australian hat manufacturer, a Kubra. Thank you,
Powerfully
Pam.
Powerfully done. Well done.
So I have one from Alison Barker, and she's actually managed to put all the words in one sentence.
On you, Alison.
Yes, that's not easy. The Akubra silence deserves the best possible shield.
And what does it mean? On that note, I have one here from Randall A. Tin. For 4 years, Aussie fought a war against the sons of the rising sun. Ironic, really, since the medallion on the side of the diggers of Kubras holding up the slouch is for the sons of the rising sun. But Japan had a long history of war that spanned centuries. The sea to its west was a battleground for their ships, acting as pirates against the Korean fishing and merchants. That was until Admiral Yi brought silence to the fleet. While pirates want to come alongside and board a vessel to plunder its treasures, Admiral Yi used a different tactic. He built the turtle ship, with shields creating an impenetrable roof dotted with protruding spears. Cannons could lay waste to an enemy ship at a distance. In one battle, the Japanese fleet of 133 against Yi's 13 ships, the pirates got what they deserved and ran after losing half their strength with no loss to Korea.
It would be good to read that one on Facebook because
he's got pictures.
He's got pictures, so you see what the turtle ship looked like. It
was
look
really,
turtle.
Really cool.
It's
the old Roman idea, wasn't it? Of where that they
absolutely
just put all the shields together and
make a shield wall and yeah.
But this was like a shield roof of the boat.
Oh, and the research that was involved in that, I'm so impressed. Well done, Randall.
This is one from Marianne White. It didn't seem at all possible that this swarthy, sunburnt Aussie would have the need to silence the intangible, yet ever-evanescent, painful schemers screaming in his head. His head was covered anyway with a kind of metaphoric hurt shield, a placebo at best, yes, but a symbol of strength and virility nevertheless. This bronzed Aussie's chocolate-brown Akubra didn't provide the kind of emotional protection this tall, dark and silent type really did deserve. But it gave him a brim to hide behind, and it kept the sun out of his eyes.
Very important, that. Mm-hmm. Well done.
This one is from Alex Robertson, and it's the sort of poem we have come to expect from Alex, I think. Wooden shields, little protection from gunfire. What did the indigenous populations of the world do to deserve colonisation? Ripping flora and fauna apart, adding insult to injury to crop and stock landscapes, the crimson thread of empire, one example of Europeans thinking they knew best, the possible sharing of resources. The silence now speaks volumes, Akubras over hearts, but reconciliation needed. Treaties and more to recognise these landscapes pillaged in the battle between claims, humans, the stewards of species, harmony the necessary outcome of battles between men.
Very, very topical. Well done, Alex.
So I've got one from Colleen Moyne, and it's a poem. The farmer stands silent, a Kubra in hand, in a dry and barren field. He hides his fear and wears his strength like an impenetrable shield. This hard-working man could not understand what he'd done to deserve this end. No possible way to save the day, no help for this land to mend.
Colleen always does a beautiful job. Well done.
This next one is from Carolyn Corden. On being an Aussie, hats are shields against bugs, silence providers and hiding spots, possible drink servers. When you add in the heat, hot sun blazing down on you, surely every Aussie one of us deserves a fine Akubra hat.
We do. We all do.
Well, this is your challenge for this week. We're taking the words from The Illusioneer and Other Tales, The Adventures of Viola Stewart Journal.
It's number three. Yeah.
Karen J. Carlisle. Number three in a trilogy. The words are bubbles, red-headed, constable, pierced, parasol. I'll read them again. Bubbles, red-headed, constable, pierced, parasol. Give yourself 10 minutes, no longer. Write your poem. Just think fast. Just start writing. Don't sit there
don't
for 20 minutes
for
thinking about it. Just get started. Email it to wordsoutloud.pba@gmail.com or post on our Facebook page, Words Out Loud, or send to Box 433, Salisbury 5108.
Coming events of Northeastern Writers. We have an event every third Thursday at the RSL Memorial Hall at Tea Tree Gully. This event occurs this time on the 17th of the 5th at 7:30, and we'll be having Brenda Eldridge there as a guest publisher.
Yeah, she's excellent. She's
from Ginninderra.
She's from Ginninderra Press, and they do a great job there. They promote a lot of artists that probably wouldn't normally get published. They're very supportive of South Australian writers. Paddock's Writing Group is every Wednesday from 12:30 to 2:30 p.m. at the Paddock's Community Centre, corner of Kesters Road and Bridge Road. The Jack Young Creative Writing Group meet at the Jack Young Centre every Wednesday 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. And Chapter and Verse meet every Thursday at the PA Hotel in Gawler from 4 p.m. Well, thank you, everyone, for being a part of the show. As always, it's been great fun. Thank you, Gordon.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you, Marilyn.
Yep, thank you. See you soon.
Thank you, Karen.
Thank you very much for having me too.
And thank you all for listening.